ExchangeWire's ATS Singapore conference returns on July the 2nd. Grab your ticket now and secure your place. You'll hear the latest on retail media, curation for marketing, the impact of AI on the industry, and much, much more. ATS Singapore 2025 will feature the latest insights from an exceptional group of speakers, highlighting future challenges and breakthroughs in media, marketing, and e-commerce. Visit exchangewire.com/events for more details.
Welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast from ExchangeWire, bringing you the latest news and views from the world of ad tech, media, and marketing.
Hello, and welcome back to the Mad Tech Podcast. I'm Grania, ExchangeWire's Head of Marketing and your host for today. This week's guest is Rob Bradley, SVP of Digital Revenue, Strategy, and Operations at CNN. Rob, it's great to have you join us.
Good to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Great to have you. And alongside Rob, we have none other than ExchangeWire's Head of Content, John Still. John, great to have you here today too.
Thanks for having me, G. It's going to be quite an episode, I think. Quite a lot going on this
week. Yeah, we were just joking. What on earth are we going to talk about? It's such a quiet week within the industry. Who knows? Let's see if we can find something.
I'm sure we'll be able to fill a bit of time, that's for sure. Well, as usual, we're going to be diving into three major news headlines. I don't think anyone's going to be surprised to hear that we'll be diving into Google making the headlines multiple times, as well as reports of a decline in news ad spend, as well as looking at the IPA Bellwether Q1 results. So let's dive into Google discussions. So Google have reversed their plans to eliminate third-party cookies in Chrome.
Really?
I've not heard that, Rob.
No, missed it.
They're opting instead to maintain them while enhancing user control over privacy settings. What does the cookie news mean for the industry? Rob, let's start with you on that one.
I think in the wake of the antitrust trial as well, it's a really good example of the power that they have over the industry, right? I mean, this has shaped strategies, decisions, hiring, investments in technology, movements in the industry left and right and up and down for a few years, right? So, you know, the fact that just that one sort of piece of decision making can do that is a good example of the power that Google has, right? But then I think you can kind of look at it in two sides, right? You can look at one of, wow, what a waste of time, what a waste of resource, whether waste of words on sites like ExchangeWire, conversations, you know, all of this side, which is, you know, obviously quite a sort of negative way of looking at it, which I think, of course, some people will be feeling like that or be feeling mixed response, which is kind of like, well, actually, you know, it has forced innovation within the industry. It's enabled publishers maybe to think differently and innovate about how they understand audiences across their own platforms. You know, half of CNN's audiences are in cookieless environments today anyway, right? So we want IDs to be able to stitch it all together. And I tend to feel a little bit more like that on the latter, that maybe the industry needs to do this anyway. I do think it would have been nice to have some clear kind of understanding of what was happening to cookies in one of the most important environments that exist, for sure, to help steer that strategy a bit sharper. But you know, our march towards IDs has been long running and long will continue, alongside now, you know, making sure we continue to utilize what's in front of us within what cookies enable. And I suppose my overall stance, actually, and I talk about this a lot with other kind of things that influence media owners, is, you know, don't build your entire strategy or business or commercial plan on ultimately what someone else can decide. Right. So, you know, if you go all in on a decision that a platform makes and then they change their mind, your business is under threat. You know, you've seen that in the news space, businesses that were built on social, right, that were going to come and eat CNN's lunch that have really struggled since, because all their audience was built on social, all their engagement platforms changed their algorithms. All of a sudden, their business model was completely ruined. So I think for us, it was always about like, yeah, okay, cookies might disappear. Let's embrace them while they exist. Let's make sure we've got a strategy elsewhere anyway that enables us to exist and thrive in a cookie-less world. But let's not go all in, right? Let's make sure that we're understanding that, hey, that the industry can change at any point.
John, how do you think the decision impacts the broader industry?
I mean, what the fuck am I going to write about? Why is
that? All those words.
All those years of the cookie crumbling. What's the cookieless future going to look like? Privacy first solutions. Like, I wrote for my interview for ExchangeWire, the task I was given was to write a piece around Privacy Sandbox and its impact on the industry all those three years ago.
Brilliant.
So I don't know what I'm going to do on a personal level. I think I really loved Rob's point then regarding like the danger of building your house on sand, basically. Like these platforms can change on a whim and have done. And this is just Google. I don't know. It felt a bit like a fuck you post the trial to say, okay, we'll just keep the cookies after these 4 years of getting rid of them. Like, no, we're not going to do what you want with them. but I also think that the industry has spent so much time in like privacy enhancing technologies in identity that they can't let it go to waste. Like, don't go back to the third party cookie jar just because it is now remaining open. Like, back yourself here. There are so many solutions that have been developed and worked on that there is an opportunity to do better and not just to revert. Like Rob said, you know, there's the tech all has its place. It's all helpful. But I would hate to see that this is just washed away with the tide. And it's just like, oh, cool, we can go back to this because this got results. I would like to see the industry back itself a bit more on this. But no, on a personal level, like that's 4 years of content, 4 years of panel sessions, 4 years of devising headlines regarding cookie puns, all gone to waste. but it's ad tech and there'll always be more. There's another, you know, there's always something around the corner. But my main hope is that the industry doesn't just revert. Like there's an opportunity here that has been laid out with the groundwork that's been done over the last 4 years, and dancing to Google's tune was always a danger. And as it's turned out, they can just do that. They don't have to keep the promises. They've kicked the can several times over the last 4 years. Never even, you know, without so much as a, you know, sorry guys, still not going to happen. And now it's just not happening. So industry, back yourself, stick to your guns, keep doing what you're doing, invest in quality, invest in privacy, and invest in the solutions that are required so you don't have to rely solely on third-party cookies.
Yeah, exactly.
We also saw, sticking with Google, that a US judge rules that they were illegally monopolizing key online advertising markets, potentially leading to the breakup of its ad tech business. US Attorney General Pamela Bondi called the ruling a landmark victory in the ongoing fight to stop Google from monopolizing the digital public square. Google's share dropped 1.9% after last week's ruling. So yeah, like yet another monopoly ruling. Is this going to be the breakup of Google? Rob, what do you think?
Look, I think it's hard to know, right? I think that's what we don't have. We don't have what the ultimate outcome will be. But as I said before, you know, just from the cookie side, the power they have over the industry, it's well covered. So, you know, I suppose people weren't necessarily surprised to see it. I think, you know, the way to look at it is more about, well, if it is broken up, what does it mean for the industry? You know, can it, you know, from a media owner perspective, it's like, well, okay, if that's not at the heart where there is this, you know, there's this critical infrastructure that we've all basically been part of, which is owned by one company. If that is, you know, that critical infrastructure has more competition, if that critical infrastructure perhaps is built to serve publishers, hopefully in a way where, you know, we are getting more of the end spends where the brand is ultimately putting into the industry, then that could be great. Because I do think, you know, it will drive innovation potentially. I think it can, it can make people think of new tools and rebuilding, you know, what the programmatic industry looks like. You know, it's still wild, and it's not just Google that's at the heart of it. It's still wild how much is lost between, you know, the spend and what's ultimately reaching the media. 50-60, I've even seen 64%, I think, was one of the recent you know, I think there's an industry shakeup that it could cause, rather than just looking at it from Google, I suppose, is what I'm saying. And I think, you know, media owners would embrace some of that opportunity. you know, whether or not, you know, it leads to outcomes as way that we view programmatic and media buying today, I think is another bigger question, because it's almost like, is this coming at a time when, you know, AI agents, all these other new platforms are actually going to be operating in a completely different way anyway? You know, so, you know, are we almost looking at something that's going to be broken up, that's actually, you know, going to be old technology, seen as old soon, which I think it potentially could be in the next few years? You know, if you think all these platforms that are building AI agents, which are allowing you to look at all of your media spend, making decisions about what's performing best in real time, doing that spend for you, kicking up reports that are all in a single instance, you know, media owners signing up and putting their data within to that to enable, you know, decision making on what our kind of inventory based sale looks like in an environment where perhaps AI agents are making decisions on what impressions they're picking. The industry is going to be shaken up anyway. So I kind of want to try and think like 2, 3, 4 years ahead is kind of what I'm saying.
John, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, as Rob said, like in all the time that Google has existed, there could be worse times for Chrome to be hived off and for it to, you know, be losing its browser, particularly with the rise of AI. I mean, in terms of whether it will be broken up, we've been talking about this for a long time. And Kieron's been a champion of this on ExchangeWire for the breakup of Google for some years. And it's closer than ever. I think there will be a lengthy appeals process, which means that we're still a couple of years away from any kind of definitive action being taken, any of the remedies being even coming to light. But I think there might be less resistance from Google in terms of the strength of the appeal than there might previously have been. It might be time for them to relinquish some of this, and they might know that. I don't want to come across like a YouTube conspiracy theorist regarding Google playing 4D chess with the world. And I don't think that's the case. I think, you know, this is a landmark ruling. It really is. Like, this is the second time they've been defined as a monopolist, and action will be taken. And I would like to see the breakup. I would like to see this redemocratize the open web a little bit. It gives power to the independents and give power back to the open web. But I think we're a couple of years away, and by that point we'll be in a very different landscape where perhaps it will be amenable for Google to hive off some of its ad tech stack.
And John, do you think it's going to lead to a bit more transparency, or do you reckon that advertisers will have to navigate an even more fragmented landscape?
I think both are probably true. I think there's like the landscape, you know, by definition, without a monopoly, the landscape will fragment and be more open, which is, you know, which is great. But also it could, you know, we'd hopefully not have the building blocks there for some monopoly to be able to exist. So there'll be room for smaller companies, a thriving independent scene, hopefully, but more transparent, better for consumers than we've previously had. So yeah, I think both could be true. It could be an increasingly transparent yet also fragmented ecosystem.
But it's not like there's not some other big players around.
No.
Either, right? Of course there's, you know, this is arguably the biggest, you know, the rise of Amazon and how fast that has grown. You know, TikTok really getting to a point where they're going to start competing with Meta. You know, what we're going to also talk about, the challenge that, you know, the open web within the news industry has within that place of dominance, but also, you know, technical decision making and what ads are seen as, you know, quality or risky to be against, or brand suitable, brand safe, whatever you talk about. All these things are kind of interconnected, and, you know, there's other huge companies. And actually, if someone's going to buy a piece of Google, just think, they're not going to be a small company, right? They're going to be a huge company, you know, if let's say that is one of the outcomes. So it is going to be interesting as it goes, but there's still going to be a world dominated by these huge players.
That's again a really interesting point. Just, you know, if it was OpenAI who were going to buy Chrome or buy a part of this, then it does create the next monopoly in the realm. So it's hard to know who could afford to buy a part of Google without creating another kind of self-serving system. So yeah, I do think it's fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's really interesting, and it'll just be fascinating to see what the next move is going to be in this very interesting chess game. Yeah, perfect. Well, let's move on to our next story. According to WARC's latest global ad trends report, ad spend on news content is in steep decline across multiple channels, with the brands shifting investment away from professionally produced journalism in favour of user-generated content and creator journalists. The report forecasts that global ad spend on news brands will fall to $32.3 billion, which is £24 billion, this year making a 33.1% drop since 2019. Globally, only 51% of ad spend now goes to professionally produced content, down from 72% in 2019. John, do you think this trend is worrying?
Yes, in short. the figures are startling. I know Rob and I did a panel on this at ATS London last year, yeah, where we talked about very similar issues. And it's, yeah, I'm very interested to hear Rob's viewpoint from CNN, of course, but from mine, yeah, of course, it is really worrying. I'm a firm believer in quality journalism and that needing to be, you know, funded, and to see that drop from 72% to 31% in the space of 6 years, it's so, yeah, it must be worrying, and it is worrying, I think, in terms of where ad spend and value is seen in the industry. I would like to hear what Rob thinks about it.
Yeah, very close to home for you, Rob.
It is. And you know, we could do a whole hour on this. But like, one, it's no secret anymore, right? The news brands have been challenged. You know, like you said, last year we were talking about this on a panel, you know, ATS. I've spoken about it a number of times at various events and elsewhere. However, yes, some of that report is starting. I mean, first, it's a fantastic report from WARC. They always do that. They always have, they use a lot of data. It's really detailed. It was great to contribute to it as well, personally. And you know, I think that some of it is quite startling. It's going to be hard to go through it all, but firstly, I urge people to go and read it. I think firstly, you know, that there's a little bit, it talks to, you know, the rise of user-generated content and more spend going there, more investment. That specific part of it is I find it a little bit ironic in that user-generated content is being spoken about at the same time as brand safety and brand suitability and people avoiding news environments. You know, the challenge is that challenge also, of course, exists within user-generated content, and the environments that exists within is incredibly well documented, the challenges of what ads can appear against by accident and the same things that can happen there. So I don't see why you can't talk about both in the same light. The second piece is though that I do obviously that there's some insight there for news brands, news companies, is that, you know, people do want this, you know, direct relationship with personalities. They want to feel like they know the person they're interacting with. They potentially care less about certain environments and just want to get the information from someone that they trust and that they feel they know. And you know, that is also an opportunity for news brands like CNN as well. And there's some good examples of that already. I mean, we have Max Foster, one of our anchors in London, has 1.2 million followers on TikTok, 70 million views of his video. Anderson Cooper's podcast, you know, focused on, oh, it's called All There Is. I don't know if you heard of it. It's a very popular podcast where it's talking about grief, a very personal journey about grief. And actually, there's an online community and All There Is community that's been built where people are literally talking about grief with each other. Again, it's an example where something's kind of been taken that you think can exist in user-generated content environments, but actually there's opportunity for news brands to do that too. So I do think you'll see more of that from news brands, because this report also tells us kind of what people want to consume as well. So I think you'll see more of that kind of thing from CNN. So it's almost like often thinking about, you can't necessarily fight human behavior and how things change. You kind of need to go with it. And that is why, of course, you know, CNN is, I think if you add up all of the people that follow us across social, in terms of numbers, the biggest news brand across social. So, you know, we want to be in those environments. They're great for marketing to bring people back to our core where it's easier to monetize, but we can take advantage of them too. Going into more some of the sort of challenges around it is, you know, I still find it, and just this week, actually, you know, I found that a well-known tool in the industry was blocking 50% of what we deem an incredibly brand safe, brand suitable environment based off their metric. And if you look at this environment on CNN, you would just think, okay, yeah, 90% of this should be okay to advertise on. And we heard that, and that it was affecting some ad spend that we were getting from some core clients. That was literally this week, right? And I was, and so now I'm looking at this part of our website, and I'm saying, what do we have here? What are they looking at? What are we finding, right? And there's an investigation point. But there's the way that I look at it is there's a tech issue there, right? In these terms of these blunt block lists, which the report goes into talking about. But then there's a human issue as well, right? In terms of who's using these lists. Are people lazy? Are people actually reading research projects like Stagwell, The Future of News? If anyone's interested, go read Stagwell, The Future of News. It shows you and demonstrates through fact that in the UK, there is no damage to your brand if you appear against news versus entertainment or sports. A very detailed study. But there's a human side in that, you know, the report, I think it says 85% of global marketing execs see value of advertising on news, right? And then CNN has done our own white paper, and we did some research that said 91% of CMOs believe that having news as part of their ad spend is valuable to them. So there's a human disconnect between the people that actually are at the top, and certainly agency leaders are saying they support news as well, and then the day-to-day kind of execution, you know, at the media planning, media buying level, where perhaps they've just been told, oh, don't go on the news site, or just use this block list that we've had running for like 3 years for this brand. And there's a laziness of keeping it up to date. So you know, and I think that's where, you know, things like the marketing conversations like this, there's a job the industry has to do to educate, get these stats, get these researchers out as well. And I think Walk has basically said, look, here's the risk to trusted, premium, fact-driven news content in a world where trust and facts is almost under fire. You know, do we believe we should be supporting this? You know, hopefully the answer most people will say is yes. But at the same time, it's our job on the media owner side to prove that working with us is valuable as well. Long answer. But yeah, hopefully it made sense. There's lots of things we can pick into within this.
Yeah, 100%. And we'll definitely leave a link to the report on show notes. John, Great. Do you think that advertisers are missing opportunities by moving away from professional produced content? Or do you think this shift is actually necessary for brand strategies?
I think the human behavior side's really interesting, and brands need to be where the audience is. And a lot of people are going to influencers, a lot of people are going across social platforms. They are having news delivered to them in new ways through influencers, through content creators. And it would be a mistake for advertisers not to be there. But it's a further mistake to the point of block list is always fascinating to me. And I know we talk about it, you know, quite a bit, but the fact that a lot of coverage of the last European Championships was on block lists because of the word shoot being involved in football coverage baffles me. The fact that Manchester remained on many agency block lists because of the Ariana Grande concert a few years ago, and it just remained on it without being updated. So I think there's so many issues here. And as much as, yes, it is essential to put ad spend where your audience is and to reach them natively where they're spending their time, there is also always a need for quality and having your brand next to, you know, high quality news, you know, well resourced, well researched, kind of guaranteed proper news coverage. And I'd hate to see that kind of, well, we're seeing it take a tumble, but I'd hate to see it go further. And it's interesting to know how publishers are really going to face it, and how they're going to redress the balance and bring that back. Whether it's meeting the audience where they are, not suggesting, Rob, that CNN start locking people in warehouses and see if they can will £1 million for staying in there for a week, Mr. Beast style. That's not on brand for CNN. But I mean, you know, diversification of platforms, I think, is going to be a really interesting one.
Yeah, and I do think, like, you know, what thinking about what a sustainable excuse me, business model looks like, you know, to be a media owner today, you know, I have to think about, you know, we have to be a data company, we have to be a research company, we have to be a sometimes, you know, a media agency, because we have to understand audiences on social and distribute branding, sponsored content, and we have to think in all of these different ways to survive. Then you look at subscriptions, opportunities, you look at events. There's lots of things that we can do to change. But also, we shouldn't shy away from the fact we do just have an incredibly engaged audience that when something's happening in the world, people come to. And also come to help guide them live their lives, whether that is making business decisions, whether that's looking at where they're going to travel to next, whether it's within sport and their favorite team, or whether that's in fashion and architecture. There's all this side of news as well. So I think sometimes the industry is a bit guilty of just thinking, well, okay, people don't want to be around politics or hard news, but there are other areas that we all have as well. But I did want to give a bit of an example, because I think this one's quite kind of cool. So the Joe Biden Trump debate, you know, that really did, you know, change the course of the election, let's say, you know, it was obviously hosted on CNN. The first TV ad in the debate that people saw was for Turkey tourism. And it was an incredibly smart decision by the CMO there and the team there, because they were like, you know, while this is the context, while this is all going on, hey, have you thought about a holiday to Turkey? And look how beautiful it is. You know, you've got a hyper-engaged audience, huge volumes. And of course, it was on TV, but it very quickly turned into a digital event because people clocked it and they were like sharing, saying how brilliant it was. And, you know, and it turned into this viral moment almost. And with the 10 days following that, the searches on Istanbul and Turkey holidays went up 16% on Google, right? Just that is just think of the power that news can have on influencing hearts and minds around what's happening. And then combine that with what we can do for brands. And the reason why I'm saying that, John, is like, we have to really prove the value that we've got for brands, right? And you know, if you think of like what we can do is like, we are ultimate storytellers, right? You know, we have access throughout the world. We understand how to tell a story that resonates with people. You know, if we're just focused on the maybe the performance end of the world, we may lose out. But if we're focused on, you know, really thinking about how we can, you know, in this instance, combine this moment with, you know, this incredible chance to say, hey, look at what's happening, and maybe you should come and travel to holiday Turkey. You know, it's brilliant opportunities like that as well.
That's fascinating that actually resulted in an uptick in the searches for trips to Turkey.
No, definitely fascinating. Those results are, yeah, very interesting. I'm going to move us on to our next news story. And we saw that overall in 2025, marketing budgets for Q1 fell for the first time in 4 years. The latest IPO Bellwether report revealed this. So a net balance of minus 4.8% of firms cut their marketing budgets, contrasting the previous quarter, which recorded a net balance of almost plus 2%. Evidence suggests that marketing spend is allocated elsewhere as a result of declining sales and reduced revenue. Many companies have adapted to a more cautious approach as the industry faces uncertainties from the political and economic spheres. Are we facing a rough year ahead? John, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about it being as a result of economic turmoil and uncertainty, then the last few weeks is, can't wait to see the Q1 results for the industry. But yeah, it's, you know, first time in 4 years to see a downturn is a little concerning. And doesn't look like we're going to find any economic certainty anytime soon. So it is concerning. It's natural when stuff isn't, you know, isn't running quite so smoothly economically, that marketing does take a hit. It's we've seen it repeatedly over the last few years, but not to the point where there's actually been a downturn in spend. Given everything that's going on in the world at the moment, then it could continue to be a little turbulent at the moment, I think.
And Rob, do you think the budget decline signals a long-term shift in how brands are approaching marketing, or do you think it's just a temporary reaction to economic pressures?
Well, the report actually has quite a positive outlook for later in 25, 26, I think, right? So, you know, I'm a natural optimist. I'm going to focus on that bit. But I suppose as a news brand, if you combine it with the last discussion, of course there's some challenges there, right? But perhaps if I could talk about it more broadly, just as someone that works in advertising and marketing, I mean, even if there's a 20% decline, doesn't mean it needs to be your 20% that declines, right? It goes to, like, you know, what are you doing to prove your value? And I think this is a perfect, again, like, we spoke about user-generated content. What can we learn from that? And how can we pivot a business model or our audience strategy, whatever it is, to cater for that? And now it's like, whatever, whoever you are, like, okay, I better sharpen my tools and make sure that I'm, you know, as data-driven as possible, that I've got as much evidence-based outcomes as possible that prove what we do is offering value to the client, and also that I am offering something ultimately unique. And I think you know you were talking about some of the, is this going to think, a lot of the talk is like, well, people are just going to go towards performance marketing, right? Because they know exactly what outcome they're going to get, and brands are going to start pivoting into spending even more on performance. But the way that I think of it is like, the key is like in that word brand, it's like people buy brands still. You don't see, you know, Apple just going around, they're going to shift all their money towards performance marketing, you know, directly trying to flog iPhones. I don't have the data on that. But the last great thing I saw from Apple was a 5-minute beautiful video of Pedro Pascal dancing around the streets right of New York. I don't know if you saw that, but absolutely brilliant, right? That's brand, right? The biggest brands in the world focused on brand for a reason. Like, to go all the way into performance, which of course should be a part of your mix, you know, would be wrong for some people. The other thing to think about is like startups and scale-ups, right? They have a brand, they reach a certain point, they get there through performance marketing, very sharp, but then they're in a pool of competitors. The next thing to take them to the next level is they have to build a brand. Where do they do that? They do that with more premium websites, more premium event-based marketing, TV, outdoor, all of these other areas, which where, funnily enough, that's where some of the biggest brands in the world also tend to spend quite a lot of their money, right? So you know, in a world where we are in that very premium brand space, is like, you know, what really, if I'm just going out there selling, which is important, you know, the boxes on screens that are targeted, you know, to, you know, the right audiences, making sure that's really sharp. But as a news brand, it goes back to what I was saying before, like, really, we're in the business of telling these incredible stories. You know, if we can work with a brand and understand directly through the agency, but and directly have a direct relationship with the brand to really understand, you know, where what their goals are, what they're looking to achieve, what's the story they're looking to tell, to kind of shift hearts and minds. You know, we know how to do that, right? We have an incredibly influential audience that drives conversations at dinner tables, can change policy, can create new laws, new outcomes, all sorts of things. That audience exists on a news brand. So really, you know, we should be out there making branded videos, doing sponsorship. That's 70-80% of our business now, right? Is that our brand studio is huge. I'm talking about it from a CNM perspective, but if you're in a different business, it's like, what is it that you can really do to drive, you know, success and outcomes in a climate where people are potentially pulling back is really what needs to be focused on.
Yeah, definitely. And John, are you kind of in the same optimistic viewpoint as Rob is?
Yeah, I hope so. I think I probably sounded a bit more negative on the at the start of this conversation than I really meant to be. I do think it's going to be a rough year and we are seeing economic turbulence, but I do also think that the smart marketing line of thinking is exactly that. Like, there's, and to use something from TV, chaos is a ladder. Like, if people are pulling back on spending, pulling back from what they're doing in terms of marketing, then the smart people who will push to do more of it and become the brand that is recognizable to use that space to elevate themselves. So there's room. It doesn't all have to be negative. There is space for, you know, for people to use their money incredibly wisely in a time of an economic downturn and a little bit of uncertainty. So yeah, rough year ahead, but also that opens up space for marketers to make real impact during it as well.
I think within all this stuff as well that we're talking about, I think that the UK and what happens in the US, it tends to start in our markets and does echo around the world somewhat. So, you know, when we talk about things, I do think it has a global relevance, but, you know, working as someone, you know, in a truly global nature, you know, I have clients everywhere from Japan to Singapore to Mongolia to Africa. You know, there's marketers out there that you say news about this and they would be, well, why would I not want to advertise on news? That's the most exclusive environment that all of my fellow C-suites are watching, that I know I'm going to reach a certain audience. You know, there are places out there where that's not happening, and the same way marketing spend is going up. So I think, you know, there is a danger that what happens in the influential markets like the US and UK does translate. But there is also opportunity when you work at a global company of working in other markets as well.
Yeah, and I think exactly what you're saying, just they're being a little bit more innovative with what they've got. And let's see where that can go. Would your hope be then to see for next quarter that budgets are allocated back, or do you think it's
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I don't want to, it's funny, you know, I think like I can, I don't want to come over as too optimistic, because I think it clearly is a challenge. I'm not denying the challenge, right? Particularly with what we spoke about first with the challenge on news brands. It's very, 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 very real. Would I like to see a bounce? But I think it's, yes, of course. But, you know, it's linked to bigger things, isn't it? It's linked to what's happening in the world from an economic point of view. So some of that needs to be solved, probably to help influence marketing spend growing again. So, you know, will it bounce back? I think if other challenges in the world are solved, then it might do. I certainly hope it does.
Yeah, definitely. Well, yeah, let's be optimistic on that one for sure. And yeah, we look forward to seeing the next report be released. But yeah, I think we can end that here today. It was a great discussion. Rob, thank you so much for sharing your opinion and views on this week's stories. John, as well, as always, thank you for your insights.
Thank you very much for having me on. Yeah, next time when there's more news going on, I'll come back again.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you inviting me on.
Thank you all for listening. That was it for this week's MarTech podcast, and we look forward to you tuning in next week.
You've been listening to the MarTech podcast, brought to you by ExchangeWire.